Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Kevin Moore Show. I'm Kevin Moore, and it is a pleasure to be spending the next hour with you. Our opening musical selection was Promises, Promises, a wonderful song from the great composer Burt Bacharach. And that's what I have for all of you today, the promise that this next hour will be informative, interesting, provocative, and maybe even a little exciting. A promise that our discussions will give you something to think about today and hopefully something to talk about tomorrow. Or what I'd like to think of as a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Well, as I like to do to begin each of our shows, I like to read or share a recent poignant story or an especially interesting essay or some philosophical quotes or thoughts or sometimes even a little poetry that touches or speaks to us all. Well, Merry Christmas, everyone. And more than any time of the year, I enjoy doing my Christmas shows, and this is a special one as we celebrate, and I'll look forward to the season. A little essay we'll start out with from Pan Lam from the Doings. Remember Christmas Past, Pam writes. Christmas is a time filled with magic and wonder. We seem to know that instinctively as children and forget it as we grow older. Maybe children experience the sheer joy of Christmas more effortlessly than adults because they're experiencing so many delights of the season for the first time. I think if we adults spent less time worrying about the Christmas to come and more time remembering Christmas's past, we too would take more delight in Christmas present. I think we need to remember what holiday experiences were like the very first time we experienced them. Try to remember the first time you were old enough to really understand who Santa Claus is and how excited you were to find the presents he left you under the tree and in your stocking. Try to remember the first time you watched Miracle on 34th Street when you couldn't imagine how Mr. Gailey would prove Kris Kringle was the one and only Santa Claus. Or the first time you watched A Christmas Story and how it made you laugh so hard your sides hurt. Try to remember the first time your parents took you downtown to see the lights on Michigan Avenue and the giant tree at Marshall Fields and eating lunch in the Walnut Room. Try to remember the first time you held a candle and sang Silent Night at Christmas Eve Mass or service. Try to remember the first December 25th you jumped up from your bed and looked out the window to find it was, in fact, a white Christmas. Or the first time you heard Bing Crosby sing his wonderful rendition of that song. Try to remember the first time you gave a child you love a Christmas gift and how much joy it brought to watch her open it, even if she was more excited by the box than what was inside. Try to remember the first time you saw The Nutcracker or A Christmas Carol and how you left the performance filled with the Christmas spirit. Someone told me recently that some people lose a bit of their Christmas spirit as they get older because they've been through so many Christmases that it's hard to get excited about them anymore. I'm going to try to prevent that from happening by taking time each year to remember the first times I experienced the many wonders of Christmas and trying to carry those feelings with me. Try to remember. Try to remember. From Pam Lanham, Remember Christmas Past. Good way to start our show, and you have to have some Christmas music. One of my favorite songs, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, sung by, covered by many, many artists, but let's listen to two. Not that you can compare them, but you certainly can enjoy them. One from James Taylor, singing Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, and then the great Frank Sinatra. Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, and we'll be back on the Kevin Moore Show.
Christmas future is far away. Christmas past is past. Christmas present is here today, bringing joy that may last. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. May your heart be light. In a year our troubles will be out of sight. From now on, have yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide gay. In a year our troubles will be miles away. Here we are as in olden days, happy golden days of precious friends who are dear to us, gather near to us once more. I know that in a year we all will be together, if the fates allow. Till then, we'll just have to muddle through somehow. Have ourselves a merry little Christmas now. Everybody knows.
That was James Taylor, and now let's listen to Mr. Sinatra.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. From now on, our troubles will be out of sight. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide gay.
Make the Yuletide gay.
From now on, our troubles will be miles away. Happy golden days of yore. Faithful friends who are dear to us, gather near to us once more. Through the years we all will be together, if the fates allow. Hang a shining star upon the highest bough, and have yourself a merry little Christmas now.
Yeah.
we all will be together. If the fates allow, hang a shining star upon the highest bar, and have yourself a merry little Christmas now.
Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas by James Taylor and Frank Sinatra. Which one do you like better? You can hear them both, right? Well, before we introduce our first special guest, heard this the other day. Instead of three wise men, we had three wise women. They would have asked for directions, arrived on time, helped deliver the baby, cleaned the stable, made a casserole, brought practical gifts, and then probably there would be peace on earth. The Joffrey Ballet's critically acclaimed reimagined classic, The Nutcracker, by Tony Award-winning choreographer Christopher Wheeldon, returns to open the holiday season at the historic Auditorium Theater in downtown Chicago at 50 East Congress Parkway through December 29th. This season's production marks the last time The Nutcracker will take place at the Auditorium Theater since its world premiere in 2016. The company moves to the Lyric Opera House with the start of the 2020-2021 season. Christopher Wheeldon's American Tale relocates Marie and her immigrant family to the Chicago World's Fair in 1893 and opens as young Marie and her mother, a sculptress creating the fair's iconic Statue of the Republic, host a festive Christmas Eve celebration. After a surprise visit from the mysterious great Empresario, creator of the fair, Marie embarks on a whirlwind adventure with the Nutcracker Prince through a dreamlike World's Fair. New this year, and this is very interesting, is an additional worker girl role who appears in Act 1, following the prologue, during the ballet's iconic party scene. The role will be alternated this year by Emma Lukacs and Lark Johnson, both students of the Joffrey Academy's Adaptive Dance Program for students with diverse movement abilities, including but not limited to those with cerebral palsy, multiple sclerosis, and Down syndrome. With the new role, the children's cast now totals 102 dancers. The Chicago's World Fair storyline of Wheeldon's Nutcracker is beautiful, and his addition of another worker girl reinforces the Joffrey's commitment to accessibility, following in the footsteps of Robert Joffrey, who believed everyone should have the opportunity to experience the art of dance, said Ashley Weider, the Mary B. Galvin Artistic Director. We are proud that our academy, which is currently celebrating its 10th anniversary year, is developing the skills of all its students, no matter their specific needs. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning star of stage, screen, and television, world-renowned dancer, having performed with the legendary Rudolf Nureyev and Margot Fonteyn, teacher, mentor, member of the Royal Ballet, former ballet master of the San Francisco Ballet, visionary in the world of dance, and the artistic director of the world-famous Joffrey Ballet, now presenting Christopher Wheeldon's reimagining of Tchaikovsky's Christmas treasure, The Nutcracker, at the Auditorium Theater of Roosevelt University through December 29th. Our good pal, Mr. Ashley Weider. How you doing, my pal?
I'm doing very well, Kevin. How are you?
You know, I know how much I enjoy talking with you about The Nutcracker, and we've been doing it for so many years, yet each year is different and fun and just puts us all in a Christmas spirit, Ashley.
Absolutely. You know, Kevin, we opened last Saturday, right after Thanksgiving, and it was fantastic. It was just great to be back in the theater with this beautiful production, and the response from the audiences, both shows on Saturday and Sunday, was just honestly overwhelming. It was so moving. The houses were absolutely packed, and I feel like Chicago has ownership of this Nutcracker. So it was, it's beautiful to come back to it.
I shouldn't limit it. I should say you put the entire city of Chicago and all its guests in the Christmas spirit with the Nutcracker.
We're trying.
You know, it brings a tear to my eye having a granddaughter who had Down syndrome, and now you have an additional worker girl who is part of the party scene in the initial introduction of the ballet. What a wonderful, it brings a tear to my eye, it really does. What a wonderful thing, actually.
You know, I think it's really important, and the history of it, Kevin, is that when the Joffrey moved to Chicago in 95, they had there was no school, and we had a very small community engagement program. So they had open auditions across Chicagoland. And this wonderful young man came to the audition in his wheelchair, and he said he wanted to be in the Nutcracker. And so at the time, Gerald Arpino was the director of the company, and they added it. And so every year we had it. And then we did the new Nutcracker, and I think that, you know, it is part of our mission that we should be a reflection of the people of our city. And so we spoke to Chris Wilden about wanting to put it in his production, and he was more than happy. He understands the value of really being inclusive. So we reworked the scene to add, and it's been so moving.
Oh, I bet.
For both the ladies that are in it, because they're in our academy, in our adaptive program, and they have done so incredibly well. So it feels, everything about it feels absolutely the right thing.
And can you imagine the people in the audience who are watching this? It must be just so heartwarming for those, even ones that are suffering from multiple sclerosis or cerebral palsy, to be able to see this and say, you know, someday I can do that.
Absolutely. And we want people to know that you know, the Joffrey and that dance has access for everybody. And I think that, you know, a little bit, you know, sometimes organizations are behind the ball about doing things that are very interactive. And I think that, you know, the Joffrey has always tried to be ahead of the ball. So I think that, you know, we want to do more things, and we want to look at other ways to be more inclusive. And so that is really the goal. And I think the Nutcracker is a wonderful opportunity to showcase how inclusive we can be, because it's our largest audience that comes to the performances. So we're reaching out across the city, which is beautiful.
Another reason the Joffrey is such a treasure. A little background. 200 some years ago, E.T.A. Hoffman wrote The Nutcracker and the Mouse King, a very, very popular fairy tale. 30 years later, Alexandre Dumas, who wrote Three Musketeers and The Count of Monte Cristo, of course, revised it. Tchaikovsky wrote the music in 1890. In 1892, it premiered at the St. Peter Bakurov Ballet in St. Petersburg. San Francisco Ballet in 1944 first presented it. Then George Balanchine, New York City Ballet in 1954. And then at the University of Iowa, who would guess? The University of Iowa. Joffrey and Arpino put together what we knew to be the quintessential Nutcracker, which we shared for, what, how many, 28 years or something like that?
Yes. So I danced in the original performance of that production back in 1987.
that's great. I love it. and here we are now with a reimagining of it many years later. So, gosh, 200 and some years, and we're still enjoying it as much as the beginning.
Well, I think that, you know, it's really interesting that, I mean, of course, the score, you know, Tchaikovsky, he gave us amazing gifts with his Swan Lake, Sleeping Beauty, and the Nutcracker.
Right.
I mean, they are simply glorious, glorious music. And I think that there's a reason why all three of those productions have remained so incredibly popular. So we look forward, you know, we've done The Nutcracker and we've done Swan Lake, and we are working on presenting The Sleeping Beauty.
Oh, great, great. A little
fantastic
surprise there. That's good. I like that.
Yeah, because I've always loved that score. And I actually, Sleeping Beauty is one of my most favorite roles. The Prince was one of my favorite roles to dance. So, watch out for the Joffrey, because it's on the way.
You know, we hear those three ballets. We hear the scores for those three ballets by Tchaikovsky. There's a lot of similarity. You hear a little similarity. In fact, I got a 3 or 4 year old wanting to hear hear of Tchaikovsky in Sleeping Beauty or Swan Lake or Nutcracker. At least they know it's Tchaikovsky, and they all think it's a Nutcracker. But nonetheless, at least they're identifying something with it, which is what we have to do as parents and teachers and mentors and grandparents and so forth, to familiarize the kids with being able to come to the theater or the ballet and enjoy that. But here we are so many years later, and it still brings a sense of wonderment, and that's the best way I can explain it, right, mm-hmm. Ashley?
Yeah.
And we enjoy it. We come to it, and the audiences are always very participatory in the whole process, and we continue to be that way. We continue to be that way. And was it a hit when it first came out, when Tchaikovsky first wrote it? Was it a hit ballet?
Do you know, I think it was not so successful, mm-hmm. and it was done, you know, originally it was done along with an opera, Iolanthe. So it was quite a long evening. Apparently,
wow.
The opera was between Act 1 and Act 2. And, I mean, it would be a very interesting idea to see what that felt and looked like.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, you know, it was after that, and especially I think, you know, Lou Christensen did the first Nutcracker in America for San Francisco Ballet.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was really George Balanchine that made the Nutcracker the phenomena that it is today, and that in every city all over America, people dance the Nutcracker. So he made it incredibly popular.
And from an economic standpoint, for a ballet company, this is the most successful or the most lucrative ballet to put on, because it kind of is the glue that holds the season together.
It really is, and I think that, you know, just for information for your listeners, like when you look at a budget for a company, and of course, you know, we're a not-for-profit company, so every ticket sale is important to us, and the Nutcracker for most organizations amounts to nearly 50% of its
wow.
total revenue for the year.
Wow.
So it is incredibly important for the health of the arts and of the company, and I think that, you know, we made a commitment that we were going to present the Nutcracker with the beautiful Chicago Philharmonic. You know, so every performance is a live orchestra, and all those elements come together, and I think it's what makes it truly, truly magical.
For our listeners who have not yet come or who have come and want to revisit the storyline, I'm going to ask you just to go over the storyline of the new reimagined Nutcracker.
So it's set in the winter before the opening of the World's Fair, and Marie, who is the young girl, in some productions she's called Clara, but in this production she's Marie, and her little brother is France. They are, unfortunately, it's a single mother who is a sculptor working on one of the statues of the World's Fair, because apparently in history many of the women did all the sculptures at the World's Fair.
Really?
So it's Christmas Eve, and it's really about a potluck and a get-together, and it's such a beautiful scene of community, of what it means to be in a community, and I think that all of us relate to that. And I think that the way Brian Selznick and Christopher Wheeldon unfolded the story is that in life, what do we want? What is most important to us? And I think it's not about material possessions. I think what is most important to us is family and to belong and to know that we belong somewhere. So that is the premise for this Nutcracker. And interestingly, Kevin, on the weekend, some people came up to me after the show and said they had heard about the Nutcracker, but they hadn't got around to seeing it. And they had tears in their eyes and said it was more, they couldn't get over how incredible it was. They said, it's more than anything I ever would have imagined the Nutcracker could be. And we hear that every performance, and it's fantastic.
What a great affirmation that you're doing something right, Ashley.
Well, we're trying. I mean, I do think the power of art is a force that is such a beautiful thing. And I think that, you know, when our world is in a difficult place, I think that to take yourself to the arts and let the arts kind of calm you and heal you for those moments, I think is very important. Like, as human beings, we need that.
Absolutely. You're here. I'll say that. Just a comment, and I just read this in a paper maybe a couple weeks ago. We lost Richard Ellis's beloved wife, Mrs. Ellis.
We did, and it's interesting that I'm talking to you today, to you, Kevin, today, because this afternoon at 3 p.m. we have a celebration of Christine Ellis Taboulet's life. Mm-hmm. Christine was an amazingly dear friend to the Joffrey, to the dance world. To me personally, she was family, and so we are doing a celebration. She had an extraordinary life, and I've been sorting lots of her things out, and incredible letters from Margot Fonteyn,
wow,
from Douglas Fairbanks, from Audrey Hepburn.
Huh.
And so, you know, a beautiful, beautiful woman with a life so full, and a life that she shared with thousands of people. So we will miss her terribly, but I think that her legacy and her commitment to the Joffrey Ballet was amazing. She started our library at the Joffrey,
mm-hmm,
because she believed that people needed to be able to have access to education on all forms of dance. And so we have an amazing library, as well as giving a lot of her stuff to the Newbery Library.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that... you know, a very special woman indeed, and dearly, dearly loved.
Well, for point of information and explanation and of course, introduction, she was the wife of Richard Ellis, who for so many years worked at the McCormick Place, Erie Crown Theater, was Drosselmeyer.
He was Drosselmeyer for 29 years in the Ruth Page Chicago Tribune Charities Nutcracker, and that is where I met both Richard and Christine. Back in 1985, I came to Chicago to do The Prince in the Nutcracker, and I shared a dressing room with Richard.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since that day, we have remained incredibly close friends. And so it is, I feel incredibly blessed to have known them. I feel a richer person for having known Richard and Christine.
I'm glad we were able to talk a little bit about that, because, you know, it's a great big world, but it's a very small loop, Ashley. And we run into people, we meet people, and when, you know, comes around, we see them again, and our lives are very circular.
Absolutely. And, you know, the odd thing is that they, you know, when Richard passed away, we dedicated all the performances of the Nutcracker to him at that time. And we are doing the same for Christine. All the performances are in her memory this season. And they passed within days of each other,
mm-hmm,
but, you know, years apart.
Right, right.
But, yes, I mean, I just think that we have met so many beautiful people in Chicago. And Chicago is home, and Chicago is family. And I think that was one of the reasons that we wanted to think about the Nutcracker and make it about a gift for Chicago. So it is about family.
And we're all honored to be part of the Joffrey family. Evidently, you can leave the Nutcracker, but the Nutcracker may never leave you. The ballet's rhythms and a host of associated memories don't disappear. They just get filed away in a part of the brain and released in flashbacks filled with sometimes early memories and emotions. And, of course, there's the whole Christmas thing. The Nutcracker serves up an idealized Christmas on a platter full of treats that everyone has been promised at one time or other by our parents or by books and movies and TV specials. Christmas can be a joyful and problematic holiday for nearly everyone. It's not religious enough for some. It's too religious for others. It's lonely for those without family, and it's too full of relatives for those who have had enough of being known by a childhood nickname. There's pressure to spend money, to commune, to be festive, and the holidays can become a time of heightened expectations and recurring disappointments. The Nutcracker, however, is simpler. Like Christmas, it always comes around in December, but no one expects quite so much from that ballet, so its gifts can be discovered in a more relaxed manner. It provides for all of us a small oasis of beauty, inspiration, and togetherness for the Christmas season. The Joffrey Ballet's critically acclaimed reimagined classic, The Nutcracker, by Tony Award-winning choreographer Christopher Wheeldon, returns to open the holiday season at the Historic Auditorium Theater in downtown Chicago through December 29th. The season's production marks the last time The Nutcracker will take place at the Auditorium Theater since its world premiere in 2016. The company moves to the Lyric Opera House with the start of the 2020-2021 season. And on the line with us right now is our dear friend, Ashley Weider. Ashley, always a pleasure, my friend, to chat with you all the time, but especially around Christmas time. Maybe a phone number or a website if people would like to get some information?
Absolutely. You can go to joffrey.org, and you can purchase tickets online. You can also call 312-386-8905, and tickets are available. There are also group sales available. So we wish each and every one of your listeners, Kevin, a very, very happy holidays. And come to the auditorium and let the magic unfold and let it touch your heart.
Merry Christmas, my dear friend, and to yours. And always a pleasure. We look forward to speaking with you again.
Thank you so much, Kevin. And a very, very Merry Christmas to you as well.
Thank you, Ashley.
Okay, bye-bye.
Talk to you soon. Ashley Weider, the artistic director of the Joffrey Ballet. And you owe it to yourself and you owe it to your family to bring them down and to see one of the great classics of the world of ballet, Tchaikovsky's The Nutcracker, at the Auditorium Theater through December 29th. For information, 312-386-8905. I always enjoy reading this from Michael Sneed's column. She revisits this every Christmas season. It's entitled A Christmas Story. She says, I once had a boss who felt a good story was worth repeating. I've told this little yarn, which is a true story about a pal of mine, and one I've printed in the past, has wound up on more than one refrigerator door and has generated a lovely response over the years. So here is the tale I've entitled, Sam I Am. This is the Christmas story about a dad named Steve who has a son named Sam who learned the truth about Santa Claus on Christmas Eve. But like a good father, Steve worried about how his son was handling this turn in his life. So Steve penned a note to Sam from Santa and left it under the tree. It read, Dear Sam, your dad stayed up last night to tell me that you now know as much about me as I do about you. Well, good. I'm glad you asked. And don't worry. No child ever really leaves me. Ask your mom. Ask your dad. They know I don't live in the North Pole. Too cold. They know I don't ride in the sleigh. Too dangerous. Still, they love me, and so will you, even 50 years from now. Oh, and what do you think happened last night just as you were asking about me? Why, a baby was born out in Kalispell, Montana. That's right. Just as you were putting aside your belief, a brand new child was born who can put it to good use. So long as that keeps happening, I'll never be out of a job. Sam, I want to wish you a wonderful life. If you don't mind, I will continue to drop by in future Christmases just to make sure you're okay. Love, Santa. P.S. Remember, Sam, you don't have to believe in me to know I'm there. From Steve to Sam, a timeless gift. And another timeless gift. Classic song written by Mel Torme, A Christmas Song with Nat King Cole. We'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire. Jack Frost nipping at your nose. Yuletide carols being sung by a choir. And folks dressed up like Eskimos. Everybody knows a turkey and some mistletoe help to make the season bright. Tiny tots
with their eyes all aglow, will find it hard to sleep tonight. They know that Santa's on his way. He's loaded lots of toys and goodies on his sleigh. And every mother's child is gonna spy to see if reindeer really know how to fly. And so I'm offering this simple phrase to kids from 1 to 92. Although it's been said many times, many ways, Merry Christmas to you. Simple phrase to kids from 1 to 92. Although it's been said many times, many ways, Merry Christmas to
Nat King Cole, The Christmas Song, and we're back on The Kevin Moore Show. Wisdom has it that every time a Christmas bell rings, an angel gets his wings. And as one of those angels, Clarence, says to a Mr. George Bailey of Bedford Falls, remember, George, no man is a failure who has friends. And thanks for the wings. American Blues Theater continues its 2019-2020 season with its 18th annual production of It's a Wonderful Life, live in Chicago, from Frank Capra's film and directed by artistic director Gwendolyn Whiteside, with musical direction by ensemble member Michael Mahler. It's a Wonderful Life, live in Chicago, runs through January 4th at Stage 773, 1225 West Belmont Avenue in Chicago. For 18 years, the American Blues Ensemble has treated Chicago audiences to a live 1940s radio broadcast of holiday favorite It's a Wonderful Life. The incredible cast recreates the entire town of Bedford Falls with Foley sound effects, an original score, and holiday carols. The Bedford Falls residents extend their hospitality after every performance, treating audiences to milk and cookies served by the cast. This story is a staple of our mission. American Blues Theater explores the American identity through the plays it produces and communities it serves, notes artistic director Gwendolyn Whiteside. This story reminds us of the fragility of life. Frank Capra's line, each man's life touches so many other lives. When he isn't around, he leaves an awful hole, doesn't he? Resonates throughout the year. During the holidays, it becomes a poignant reminder as we gather with our loved ones. And on the line with us right now is the proud graduate of Northwestern University. Dara is an award-winning performer, having been seen in such popular works as The Spitfire Grill, South Pacific, The Wizard of Oz, and Fiddler on the Roof. She has worked at the Royal George Theater at the Center and Marriott Theater and is a member of Acres Equity. And returning to Bedford Falls for the 8th time, Michael is an award-winning writer, composer, and actor, having been at Writers Theater, Royal George in Miracle, and also at Marriott Theater. A couple who are two of the brightest and most talented stars in the world of Chicago theater, now both starring in the 18th anniversary production of It's a Wonderful Life, live in Chicago, adapted from the Frank Capra classic film for American Blues Theater at Stage 773, 1225 West Belmont through January 4th. Dara Cameron and Michael Mahler. Well, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Hi, Kevin. Great to be here.
Great to have you, and it's got to be exciting. You guys are doing this again and again and again.
Yeah, it's become part of our holiday tradition, that's for sure.
And, you know, Michael, a holiday tradition for all of us, not only you and Dara, but we are certainly enjoying this, and we have enjoyed it, as Gwendolyn said, for 18 years. And even before that, because we all enjoyed the film so much, you know, Frank Capra's and James Stewart's favorite film takes place in 1946, Christmas Eve, Bedford Falls, New York. And here we are so many years later, exhilarated and still a sense of wonderment by what's happening in Bedford Falls.
Yeah, it's one of those stories that feels evergreen. It seems like every year we come back to this show, there's something new that resonates for what's going on in your lives today. It's really a powerful story that way.
Now, you must feel like you're revisiting old friends, Dara, when you see the same people coming back for Milk and Cookies every year at the end of the show that you've seen the year before, right?
Yes, we are so honored that people make us and our show a part of their tradition. Yeah, we have families that come back. We had a family, I think, that was there for the eighth year the other day, and people we have a 20-month-old son, so I've had so many people come up and say, "Oh, how's your baby? You're pregnant a couple years ago." So it's really special. It's a pretty unique aspect of this particular production.
And the one word you just mentioned was very important here is family, because it's a family production, is it not, Michael?
Yeah. I mean, our ensemble sort of feels like a family, and it's this cast, you know, we've been together a long time, and we get along really well. It does feel like we're sort of all coming home for the holidays when we do this show together.
Home for the holidays. Good, very good line. For those who haven't seen it, I can't imagine anybody hasn't, but just give us a brief overview of what the story's about.
Oh, sure. Well, it's about a guy named George Bailey who is sort of, we meet him at the end of his rope. He's sort of ready to throw his life away because he's in a big financial trouble. And luckily he's got a guardian angel named Clarence who sort of takes us, the audience, through his entire life leading up to this moment at Christmas Eve. And then at the last possible second, Clarence jumps out of heaven, lands in the water, and George fishes him out. And Clarence sort of takes him through what the world would be like if George had never been born and all of the people whose lives would be affected. And at the end of the day, George comes to realize that, hey, it is a wonderful life.
You know, from a short story by Philip Van Doren Stern, he couldn't get it published, so he sent it out as a Christmas card to his friends.
Right.
Which is kind of interesting.
Right. Isn't that funny? And the movie wasn't a big success when it first came out. It was kind of a flop. But it certainly has since then become a huge part of everyone's holiday tradition, and it's been beloved for years and years and years.
And isn't that a surprise, because some of the contributing writers to the original script were Dorothy Parker, Dalton Trumbo, and Clifford Odets. How could something not be a hit when they're part of
it? Yeah, destined to be a classic, yeah.
And, you know, don't they have it, I think on TV they have it going looping 24 hours a day, but, you know, you still want to watch it that much, too.
Right. Well, and our version is considerably shorter. We tell the story in about 80 minutes. So, yeah, we found a way to condense it so that it's sort of the best of It's a Wonderful Life.
Which lends itself there to bring the kids to something that short.
Exactly. It is. We have so many kids for whom this is their first theatrical experience and for whom this is their first introduction to this story. So that's really special. And then to have their, you know, them be very excited about how they saw it, and then they're going to go home and watch the movie and talk about it with their parents, and yeah, that's pretty special.
Well, to your point, and I think this is very important to chat about, is that it's our responsibility now with your little one, as parents, as teachers, as grandparents, to expose and to introduce kids, young people, to the theater. And what better way to do that than to bring them to the theater like to see something like this, It's a Wonderful Life, because they're comfortable. It's not too strict of an environment. They get cookies and milk afterwards, but they become
right.
comfortable with that. And so what are they going to say to you, Dara? They're going to say, "Mommy, would
go
you
back.
Take me to another one?" And they're going to want to go to Beauty and the Beast, or they're going to want to go see The Lion King, because they know how much fun it is. And there you have the audience, which is the audience is going to be for years to come.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's how you keep it going, for sure.
I think it's It's like we had the opportunity of talking with Ashley Weider, who's the artistic director of the Joffrey Ballet. Another example, the Nutcracker, listening to that and coming to that ballet on a regular basis, on a yearly basis. Or we always like to revisit the Christmas Carol. And here's another one, a classic, an American classic, to come and see It's a Wonderful Life. What does it feel like to you to be on the stage and see that affirmation from the audience and how excited they are to enjoy what you're doing on stage?
Oh, it's so wonderful. Yeah, we're in a nice, intimate space at stage 773. So we get to sort of be really up close with the audience, and we sort of get to feel how they're going on the story, going on the journey with us. And, you know, like you said, we get to interact with them in person afterwards as we sort of share milk and cookies together. It's pretty special to have that close of a connection. And, you know, we get all sorts of different people coming to see it, people who, you know, like Zara said, who haven't seen the story before, who know it really well. And another cool aspect of the production that changes every year is, you know, because it's a radio play, because mm-hmm. we're presenting it as if we're all radio actors in the 40s, you know, telling the story of It's a Wonderful Life on the radio. Like you said, there's a Foley guy. So even if you don't really love It's a Wonderful Life, if there's like a couple of people out there who don't love this story, you know, they can get excited about seeing the mechanics of how a radio show works, you know, watching the Foley guy make the sound effects, or watching me over at the piano listening to our jingles that we write every year for different companies who help out the show. There's lots of different ways to sort of get engrossed in what we're doing.
Michael, explain to our listeners what a Foley guy is for those that are a little younger than some of us.
Oh, sure. Foley guy is just another word for a sound effects guy. Mm-hmm. So we have Sean Gowdy, who's been doing sound effects for us for, I think, 11 years. Mm-hmm. And he's really got it down to a science.
Yeah.
It's amazing. He's got a time so that every time someone walks, he's got little shoes on a suitcase that he kind of clomps around, and he's
right.
got sound effects for splashes in the water and for crunching in the snow and opening and shutting doors and clacking of keyboards. It's really amazing. He's kind of a whirling dervish over there for the whole show.
And that's how things used to be performed and presented in the 1940s.
Right. Exactly. So if you're watching on the radio, you can sort of close your eyes and imagine the whole thing happening in front of you.
And the advertisements are from the same time frame, too.
Yeah, that we try to make it sound like the commercials here from the show are right out of the 40s. But they're for modern companies, so it's kind of fun for the audience to sort of recognize, hey, they're singing about that restaurant across the street. You know?
And Dara, there's a responsibility, too, that you have. You've been doing it for so many years, but nonetheless, there is that person who's coming for the first time. So you can't just mail it in. You have to be excited about what you're doing, because it's the first introduction for them to be excited about this also.
Oh, right. Yeah. I mean, just as much as it's an honor for us to, you know, get to share the story, it's also a responsibility when you're doing something that is so timeless and so important. It is, yeah, you do feel a responsibility on your shoulders when you start the show every day. You know, it's fun. We have about 15 minutes at the beginning of the show we spend singing Christmas carols and doing a Name That Tune competition, and it's sort of silly and fun. And tell everyone, you know, how it's going to work and sort of introduce ourselves as these 1940s radio actors. And then the moment where we sort of, where Mike introduces, you know, we begin the broadcast, and it's always really a lovely moment because there's a stillness that kind of comes over the theater and us actors, and with the audience as well. We kind of all take a collective breath together knowing that we're about to start the story itself. And yeah, you always feel a little bit of that
excitement
and responsibility in that moment.
Well, God bless you guys for doing that. I hope you keep that excitement going for a long time. Now, I have to throw a few things at you. Now, you could either answer this individually or collectively. And these are some very important Christmas questions, Michael and Dara. I need you to answer now. Charlie Brown or the Grinch? Who's your choice?
Oh, man. I got to say, the Grinch is a lot of fun, but my heart's always in the Charlie Brown.
Okay.
Yeah, Charlie Brown.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fruitcake, A or nay?
Nay.
Yeah, I got to go yay. I think we're divided on that one.
I like fruitcake myself. I kind of like it. Miracle on
34th Street. Building material, you know. If it's too hard to read, you can make a house out of it.
Miracle on 34th Street or National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation?
Oh, well, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, that was one of my family's favorites.
gotta love the Griswolds.
Even the Miracle on 34th Street is a classic. I almost have National Lampoon memorized. So.
White Christmas or The Christmas Song?
You gotta have both.
Okay, that's okay. Yes, sir. We're on this show, we can do that. Merry Christmas or Happy Holidays?
I like Happy Holidays. I like being able to open it up to everybody.
And I'm Jewish, so I...
Okay. Well, come on. You gotta like fruitcake then, if that's the case. Your favorite Christmas wish or Hanukkah wish, whichever one.
I think every year it's nice to sort of wish that you see another year of happiness and health and love. And, you know, we have a little tradition in my family that we spend Christmas Eve together and we go around the circle and we tell each other, you know, something special that we love about them. And I love that I wish that everyone has sort of traditions that keep them going in the year and remind them that they're loved and connected to people.
Yeah, and it's especially this year with our son who's sort of becoming excited about holidays and, well, candles. He's very,
very excited about candles.
Okay.
is going to be really special for us this year.
Yeah, new traditions and old traditions alike.
And one of the traditions, hopefully, will be the American Blues Theater doing It's a Wonderful Life year after year after year. As is said in the classic It's a Wonderful Life, you see, George, each man's life touches many other lives, and when he's not around, he leaves an awful hole, doesn't he? This play, like an American version of Dickens's A Christmas Carol, there are some differences between the two apart from time and place. In A Christmas Carol, Scrooge is given a chance to change the way he lives his life. In A Wonderful Life, the hero, George Bailey, is given the chance to change the way he looks at life, an adjustment in the way he sees his place in the world. He doesn't need to change the way he acts, just the way he looks at life. George, you've had a wonderful life. At this time of year, when many of us are taking stock of our lives, looking back on the past year, making wishes for the present, and getting ready to make resolutions for the future, we're always drawn to this story. George wasn't a Superman type hero. He was, like many of us, a human being trying to live life the best way he knows how. And maybe this little story should serve as a gentle reminder to all of us that we are all capable of making small decisions every day and practicing those awesome random acts of kindness that touch many other lives and ultimately, in our small actions, change the world in big ways. Because to the world you might just be one person, but to one person, you might just be the world. Winner of the American Theater Wing's prestigious 2016 National Theater Company Award, American Blues Theater is a premier arts organization with an intimate environment that patrons, artists, and all Chicagoans call home. American Blues Theater explores the American identity through the plays it produces and communities it serves. American Blues Theater continues its 2019-2020 season with its 18th annual production of It's a Wonderful Life, live in Chicago from Frank Capra's film and directed by artistic director Gwendolyn Whiteside with musical direction by ensemble member Michael Mahler. It's a Wonderful Life, live in Chicago runs through January 4th at Stage 773, 1225 West Belmont in Chicago. I'm going to give a phone number if people would like to get some tickets, 773-654-3103. And on the line with us right now are Dara Cameron and Michael Mahler, both starring in It's a Wonderful Life. I very much appreciate you guys taking a little time here to chat, and certainly I'll wish you a happy holidays and a wonderful Christmas season. And that little one, I'm sure, is going to like Santa Claus when he comes around.
Absolutely, yes.
For sure.
Keep him away from the candles and continued success.
Thank you so much.
Yes, great to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dara. Thank you, Michael.
Bye.
Merry Christmas. Bye-bye. Dara Cameron and Michael Mahler, both starring in It's a Wonderful Life, live in Chicago, adapted from the Frank Capra classic film for American Blues Theater at Stage 773, 1225 West Belmont, through January 4th. For information, 773-654-3103. Well, let's go back to Mr. Sinatra, one of my dad's favorite songs in his memory. I'll Be Home for Christmas, and we'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show. Ooh.
I'll be home for Christmas. You can plan on me. Please have snow and mistletoe and presents on the tree. Christmas Eve will find me where the love light gleams.
Well, that about does it for our show today. I thank you for sharing this last hour with me and hope you, our listeners, have enjoyed this time as much as I have. I'd especially like to thank our guests, Mr. Ashley Weider, the artistic director of the world-famous Joffrey Ballet, now presenting Christopher Wheeldon's reimagining of Tchaikovsky's Christmas treasure, The Nutcracker, at the Auditorium Theater of Roosevelt University through December 29th. For information, 312-386-8905. Always a treasure in the city of Chicago around Christmas time. And Dara Cameron and Michael Mahler, both starring in It's a Wonderful Life, live in Chicago, adapted from the Frank Capra classic film for American Blues Theater at Stage 773, 1225 West Belmont through January 4th. For information, 773-654-3103. Finally, a famous writer once said, one ought every day at least to hear a little song, read a good poem, see a fine picture, and if it were possible, to speak a few reasonable words. I hope on our show today we have, at the very least, done just that, spoken a few reasonable words. At that, I'd like to wish everyone a good week, and as that British group once said, and in the end, the love that you take is equal to the love that you make. Merry Christmas, everyone.
know the way I feel for you. It's now or never. The more I love, the more that I'm afraid. But in your eyes, I may not see forever. If we can be the best of lovers, yet be the best of friends. If we can try with every day to make it better as it grows, any luck, then I suppose the music, the music.